Hi, welcome to Off Script. I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
Today on the show, we're taking a look at Companion. An odd kind of, I don't want to give away what exactly it is. Horror thriller, we'll say, for this Valentine's Day, starring Sophie Thatcher and Jack Quaid, is out in theaters. Excited to talk about it. We're also going to take a look at Strange Darling. This was one I missed last year, and a lot of people told me I should check out Strange Darling. Dude, so glad I watched Strange Darling. Please stick around for the Darling review. It's really rad. We're going to take a look at some upcoming trailers. New Fantastic Four, huh? First steps, we finally have a look. We're going to tell you what we think. Along with that Magazine Dreams movie with Jonathan Majors. Finally got a trailer for that one. Hot takes to come. When you talk about the news, before we get to all of it, I got to talk about what we've watched this week. Andy, what's been on your local off-the-pod watch list? What have you been watching?
So I didn't really catch a lot of new things this week, but I did do a rewatch with some friends of Moana 2 with some friends who hadn't seen it. And I think it's actually even worse in hindsight. It's just, man, it is so boring. And so, like, the songs are not memorable. And like I said, it's definitely aimed, it feels like a babysitter machine because there's all this, like, slapstick and real, like, elementary humor. Sure. And it seems like they didn't have the budget for The Rock to be in mode because he's only in like the second half of the movie. But at the same time, it's made twice as much money as the first one. So, you know, it's a hit in Disney's eyes.
One of my favorite bits of trivia about Moana 2 from when we reviewed it late last year is that a few of like the local villagers in Moana's like village are definitely Dwayne Johnson relatives. Like a couple of his kids are in there, I think. Like,
yeah,
it's good.
Sounds about
like,
right.
Why not bring the whole family, right? Everybody come along. Moana 2's, I don't know. Yeah, I think maybe on rewatch, I may not be into it as much. But first time through, it was at least entertaining, right? Good for the kids. Bring the kids. I have watched a few things this week, which is weird. Late night stuff, like staying up late, can't sleep, might as well throw something on. Started with Mystery Men, the Ben Stiller movie from 1999. That movie rocks. And I liked it back then, and I still like it now, and I've been watching it because Ben Stiller is directing Severance on Apple, which is still incredible. You should go check out Severance. I watched Pacific Rim, a Guillermo del Toro film from 2013. Does not hold up as epic as I remember. It's a shame. I remembered it being real big kaiju movie, right? Big Rock'em Sock'em robots and Charlie Hunnam's in
right,
it. But
right.
Like somehow I was more bored the second time through. Still love Charlie Day as a weird scientist. Though. Grand Budapest Hotel from 2014 holds up. Great dude. Love Anderson. Anderson Stan. Love Grand Budapest. And Hardcore Henry, 2015 feature. You remember this movie? It's all first person.
Yeah. Like, I never saw it, but yeah.
Yeah, it's from that age of YouTube where we were making like first person fighting videos and stuff, and somebody just made a whole film and it is awful. I didn't even really get through all of it, so I left it on the end here. It's real rough, dude. I like really glad I didn't pay to go see that in a theater. It's not anything awesome. We got to talk about the news though. Speaking of things that aren't awesome, we got to talk about Carlos Sofia Gascon's recently resurfaced tweets. For those who aren't in the know, Carla Sofia Gascon is the star of Emilia Perez, which is a hotly contested feature because it's got 13 nominations at this year's Oscars, setting the record for the most Oscars in most Oscar nominations in a year. Recently, some old tweets resurfaced of our star, and they're not good, dude. They're kind of bad. What do you know about this?
It's amazing what can happen in a week. Carla Sofia Gascon is nominated for Best Actress for Emilia Perez in these Oscars. She's not really a front runner, kind of a honor to be nominated situation. But within the last week from when we reported these, she has had this epic crash out, unbelievably like torched her Oscar campaign to the point of like she may have ruined it for the entire movie, the entire cast. They're talking Zoe Saldana's Oscar might be in danger. And what happened is a bunch of old tweets from about 4 or 5 years ago, not super old, surfaced after Gascon had made some kind of derogatory remarks about Fernanda Torres, who's another Oscar nominee from Brazil. And the Brazilians were not having it, and they went on the hunt, and they combed through a bunch of her old tweets, and a bunch of stuff came to light was really bad, like incredibly racist, incredibly like Islamophobic. It's the things that I'm not going to repeat. Like they were that bad. And it wasn't like one kind of problematic tweet. It was like 10, like they just kept coming. It was like a stream of consciousness from a number of different awards. She had made content, comments on the Oscars from 2019 and 2020 and some other periods. And there wasn't really any, she tried to spin it and say, oh, well, these are taken out of context, or, you know, one of them she claimed was doctored and she didn't write, but it's like, girl, we can see the tweets. Like, they have your name on it.
Yeah. Verified. Like, oh, okay. Yeah.
So that came to light, and then it started, you know, the damage control happened where she was like, oh, that's taken out of context. That's not me. I'm not that person. And it just got worse. She then, on her own, without anyone's approval, she went on CNN and Espanol and did an hour-long interview, like, defending herself. And she kind of gave an apology, but not really. She said something like, I'm sorry for people that were hurt, but that's not me. And, like, the light will always triumph over darkness. She never apologized for what she actually said. it's only gotten worse over the weekend. And at this point, they're talking about that, like I said, Zoe Saldana's Oscar might be in trouble, that entire movie's, all their nominations, because that movie is about acceptance and tolerance, and now you have your main character being the exact opposite of that. So it's real bad. And at this point, Netflix is, they've taken her off the campaign posters for the Oscars stuff. They are not in contact with her anymore. They're not paying for her travel and, like, hair and makeup to go to, you know, the campaign events. So it's real bad.
Yeah, you told me just before we got recording that Netflix has, like, cut her off at the legs and is not providing any travel or anything, like, crazy for an Oscar campaign. I don't know, dude. Like, it's weird because on the one hand, Hollywood has forgiven a lot more than bad posts, for sure, dude. Like, there are plenty of people in Hollywood, production, on camera, off camera, who have done awful things and said awful things and years later have a revival campaign and come back and do new things, right? Robert Downey Jr. is one of these examples. James Gunn is kind of one of these examples. So, like, I have no doubt that Carla Sofia Gascon will continue working after this, for sure. But she is so uniquely positioned with the Oscars right now, which is the biggest celebration in film, and now is getting all of this heat. Like, all of this is just coming in, and it is kind of this horrible amalgamation of, like, chaos. Like, they got LA wildfires out there. They don't know if they're going to delay the show or not. And then, like, surprise, this huge pick for Best Actress is got some sordid history and is going on CNN and voicing their opinion about it. It's like, oh boy, what a meltdown. What a mess.
Yeah, it's nuts. And it's not even, one of the big questions is, like, how did Netflix not vet this movie? Like, they bought it at Cannes, I think. And how did they not go through the stars? Cause they have been heavily, heavily campaigning for this for award season. It's one of a lot of things. And now, you know, a quick Twitter search, pulls up all these disastrous, tweets, and, like, the damage control has been really terrible, like, not really apologizing for doing this hour-long interview where she's really defensive. She did the famous, well, I have a black friend that therefore I'm not racist, which, referring to Zoe Saldana. And I was just like, man, you can't win. It's so bad. And, like I said, the entire movie might be completely toxic now.
Yeah, that's the other part of this. Before I move on to Ari Aster's next film here on the next story, I got to know, like, what is happening to the larger Emilio Perez campaign because of this? Because 13 noms are a lot, but only one of them is specifically tied to Carla Sofia Gascon, right? Do you think the whole movie's tanked? Do you think it's going to get, like, a couple of odd ones? Like, what? I think it's probably still going to get some picks for sure with that many noms, but I do think her campaign is probably toast.
Yeah, I mean, she was never a front runner, like I said, but, like I also said, Zoe Saldana was a lock for the Best Supporting Actress, and now it seems like that, because, again, how do you put this movie on a pedestal when your star has said a bunch of really super racist things? It's a real conundrum. I think it might still get some below the line awards, things like the technical things, editing, sound, something like that. They might still, you know, international features, so they might still reward it with something. But some of the major awards may just be out the window now.
Yeah. That's such a story.
Ariana Grande is kind of in second place to win the supporting actress. She might get it now. Like, she really might swoop in there. I listened to an hour and a half long interview with her today, actually. And she's incredible on that. And so she might be the one now.
Yeah, dude. She is great in that movie. Keep it here on Off Script for more, man. We'll cover this again next week if there's any developments. Otherwise, Oscars are coming. We'll be covering them here on the show. So stay tuned. Next story this week. Ari Aster's new film, Eddington, starring Joaquin Phoenix and Emma Stone, heads to EFM as A24 Eyes Can debut in a summer release. It's a story out of Variety. They had the exclusive. Up until now, when we're just reporting on their story, it's like... You miss 100% of the shots you don't take when Wayne Gretzky, Michael Scott, right? Anyway, yeah. A24 has got Eddington coming down the road. This is Ari Aster's new feature after Beau Is Afraid. What do you know about this movie, Andy?
Well, we don't have a lot of details, but it's got a big cast, or a major cast, rather. We have Joaquin Phoenix, Emma Stone, Pedro Pascal, and Austin Butler all star in this. All we know plot-wise is that this family or group of friends all are living in a small New Mexico town called Eddington, which they can't kind of leave. And there's something kind of sinister going on. And that's all the details. We don't have a lot, but we do have some things that we can read into this in that it's going to premiere at Cannes, which is the biggest indie festival, happens in May. A24 is distributing and did the financing. They're aiming for a summer release. And so... this might be an all-timer just based on this cast alone and Ari Aster, who I love his first two movies. Didn't love Beau Is Afraid, but can still respected the what that movie was. And because Joaquin Phoenix and Emma Stone are some of the top. They are two of the top actors working today. Pedro Pascal and Austin Butler, obviously major stars themselves. So I'm super excited about this.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Eddington as well. Ari Aster's first features, Hereditary and Midsommar, big hits here on the show. We covered both of them when they came out. Hereditary was a huge surprise for Dr. Draper and I. That was a big deal when that came out. We were both stunned in our seats in the movie theater. Like, we had no idea that was going to be as cool as it was. Huge kickoff. Beau Is Afraid, third film, a little weird. And while I liked it at the time, and I still generally do, I've never once gotten all the way through it in one sitting since seeing it in the theater. Every time I've tried to watch it at home, I fall asleep. I got something to do. I don't have the time. Like, it is a bit big. And Aster acknowledged that in a lot of the press for it. He knew it was going to be weird. He knew people weren't going to love it. Similar to Damien Chazelle in Babylon, right? I think this is going to be a bit more straight and narrow. This should probably get back more in line with, like, what mainstream audiences will like more. Because he seemed to really acknowledge, following Beau Is Afraid's release, that, like, he probably didn't get in another movie like this again. He needs to get back into... back into a lane that studios like. So I'm sure Eddington is something they're looking forward to. Big star power behind it. Why not, dude? It's probably going to be a banger. Anything else on this one before we move on to the box office, Andy?
I'm ready for the box office.
Dogman is barking loudly. God, I love these headlines. And a near record January opening for an animated film. And Companion also impresses. Turns out DreamWorks Animation's got another one under their hat. Hi, Andy. What do you know about Dogman?
Dogman won the weekend with $40 million. Huge for, again, an animated film, family-friendly. Those family audiences can really rake it in. I don't know much about this property. I have heard Dogman is half man, half dog, as the title says. It's based on a animated property, and that's also a book series or like comic series that is extremely successful, millions of copies sold, that sort of thing. So this is doing really well. And Companion also raked in about $10 million. Good for the kind of small movie that it is. The box office is up about 20% over last year, which is huge, even over 2019, which is kind of the benchmark for revenue. And so it's a good weekend for the box office.
Yeah, Companion's a great example of a kind of low-budget feature, not making a ton of money, but easily making its money back opening weekend. They used to make a lot of movies like this. There was a time when, like, the low-budget, mid-budget was the way to go. So it's actually really refreshing to see something come out and do pretty good. Dogman is, yeah, based on a Dave Pilkey book series, similar to Captain Underpants. He does those books, made that movie. So, yeah. Seems like a layup for all the kids. There's not a lot in its way right now, right? I think kids are kind of done seeing Mufasa. Sonic 3 is come and gone. Why not? Not a bad weekend at the movies. And I do think Companion's a lot of fun, for sure. Especially coming into, Valentine's. Getting together with the ones you love. That's what it's all about. With that, we should probably jump into it. So, Andy's going to be taking the summary on this one. I'll get out of his way. Andy, please, take it away.
Companion So this is the latest film from writer-director Drew Hancock, who has done some TV, and he's done a lot of writing. This is his first feature film, first directorial debut. It stars Sophie Thatcher and Jack Quaid. Sophie Thatcher is Iris, and Jack Quaid is Josh. They are this happy couple. They seem to be the perfect couple. Iris fawns over Josh, wants him to be happy, wants to make sure his every need is met. It's kind of a little bit too good to be true. Our couple is going on a getaway weekend with some friends at a cabin out in the woods, which turns out to be a really big house. Their friends Kat and Eli are. She is dating this very wealthy Russian guy named Sergei, who might be a gangster, a real shady looking dude, like 25 years older than her. But there's just a few of them getting together for the weekend. They're also joined by Lucas Gage and Harvey Guillen, who are a happy couple as well. And I don't want to talk too much about this, but it's a getaway movie. We're at a cabin in the woods. Everything seems kind of too good to be true. Iris is nervous because she wants to make a good impression. She's meeting Josh's friends. She wants to get along with everyone. She's afraid, you know, what she's a little insecure about what people might think. But there's a lot more going on than appears. And Sergei kind of has eyes for Iris and also strikes us as a man who doesn't take no for an answer. So that's our setup, and that's as much as I'll say. Well, we're going to have to talk around the plot a lot, but still lots to talk about. What do you think, Zach?
I like Companion, and I didn't think I was going to like it, which is, I think, a good foot to start off on for the review. Like, I had seen the trailers a couple times. The big claim was, like, from the producers of Barbarian. And there's a scene where Jack Quaid and Sophie Thatcher are sitting at a table and he puts a candle under her outstretched arm and it starts to burn and she's kind of freaking out about it, but just sitting there quietly. Like, it's this odd, something's going on here, a surreal thriller kind of look. And there wasn't a lot that I knew about it, but it just didn't seem, I don't know. It didn't look like it had the sauce. It looked weird. And I just thought, I don't know. It didn't do it for me. I'm pleased to say that Companion is more than meets the eye. There's actually a lot of cool stuff going on in this movie. I'm surprised it's as cheap as it is. I had seen one byline for the movie that I didn't think was giving away any sort of twist. And when the movie started, I thought, oh no, I accidentally heard what the twist is in this movie. No. I heard like the first start of a thread. And Companion's whole thing is like, there's a lot of string to unravel with what's going on with this story. And as it slowly starts to come apart and things start to go off the wall, like things really start to go nuts in Companion, it's a really fun time. It's fast, it's quick, small cast, pretty funny. Like, it's a good time. I really enjoyed Companion. So where do you want to start talking about it?
Well, I want to talk a little bit about our maybe tone and performances. Like I said, I don't want to get into the plot because there's lots of twists and turns that I don't want to give away. But this is a horror comedy. It's not super serious. There's a lot of laughs. There's a lot of jokes. There is horror stuff. If you've seen the trailers, and avoid if you can, but there's lots of blood. We see blood spatters. We see gunshots. We see some kind of fistfights, chases, the usual stuff you would see in a horror movie. So it has those kind of elements, but again, it's lighthearted. It's funny. The couples are really funny. Lucas Gage and Harvey Guillen are this kind of mismatched gay couple where Lucas is way more handsome than Harvey, way more attractive. But again, like Iris, he's also madly in love, wants Eli to have everything, all of his heart's desire. So we know something's not quite right. And again, Kat, played by Megan Suri, and Sergei are also a very odd couple. Like I said, he's like 20 years, or she's 20 years his junior. She says at one point, you know, I'm like his sports car. I'm just an accessory. I'm something that he likes to be seen with and then look good with. So that's kind of our setup of characters. And I'm not going to talk about when things go wrong, but they inevitably do. And a lot of fun performances. Sophie Thatcher is a star. Like, we saw her in The Fall in Heretic, and she's going to be a household name. I feel like she's a little bit like Catherine Newton, where Catherine Newton's blown up a lot this year. That's going to be Sophie Thatcher in the next couple of years.
Yeah. The plot reminds me a lot of something like Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. A lot of really great talent in the cast, like very young, small cast, like bit of a mystery to pull your audience in and then like pull your characters through, often painfully. Companion's like biggest claims, I think, is like its imagery, right? The striking things we're looking at, like Sophie Thatcher's shot in the trailer of her eyes whited out, and there's this, the thing with her arm on fire, and there's her covered in blood, you know? And like Thatcher manages to hold like that performance really consistently with what her character is doing, which is pretty complicated. And it works great, dude. Like she's alluring, she's endearing. You're hoping for her. You're pulling for her the whole time. It doesn't seem like she's going to get out of it. And uniquely, like Companion plays with like these roles of like protagonist and antagonist a bit. They kind of jump around. Who is at fault for what's happening? And most importantly, like who is intending for all of this violence to occur versus like who is a victim of this? It kind of walks along that line in a funny way. And Quaid and Thatcher like managed to do it so well together. They seem to have immediate chemistry. Same with Harvey Guillen and Lucas Gage. Like the two of them get along great. Kat and Sergey like are kind of odd characters at the house when we arrive. We know that something, they know a little bit more maybe than they're letting on. But like in a way that is inviting to the audience and brings you in, moves quickly from our first act to our second act with a surprising reveal, I think, which is really effective. Like from there, it's funny and it's violent still for sure. Like, but I think Companion knows the line of where we can laugh and where we can lean in with our audience. There's a great scene from when Iris and Jack first meet, and Jack's listening to the song Iris by the Goo Goo Dolls. Like really ham-fisted and funny. Like, yeah, just little tiny touches like that. Like make Companion a really fun watch. And again, I know I just mentioned it, but Harvey Guillen and Lucas Gage are a lot of fun. Guillen's got that sauce from What We Do in the Shadows, like brings it. It's all on display here. It's a great time.
Yeah, it is really enjoyable. There's a lot of fun. There's a lot of jokes. And again, it's horror and it's definitely, you know, has some real violent stuff, but it's also cartoonish in a way. It's not like super, super scary. I wanted to talk about scale a little bit. So there's a number of films that are come out that are kind of left over from the pandemic era, the lockdown era, a lot of COVID films that were either made during that time or held on to. And this is a little bit of that because it's a very small cast. It's like 10 people total, including some side characters. They're at a deserted, remote, that's the word I'm looking for. They're at a remote cabin. And there's basically two locations. There's the house and then there's the woods, and that's pretty much it. And you know, there's a couple of crowd scenes that, which are made in flashback. And I think those are the only two scenes, where that happened. So it's a small kind of bottle film that seems a little left over from the pandemic era.
Yeah. And it's definitely angling for like the February 14th, bring your boyfriend or girlfriend, come see Companion. It's specifically angled at like younger audiences, 20, you know, 15 to 35 crowd is going to love this movie. They're going to be like, oh, Companion's great. Like it knows what it is. In fact, in front of Companion, one of the trailers that ran is this new horror movie, Hard Eyes, that's coming out. Same, could not be a better trailer in front of a movie. Like it's nailing the exact same audience. We're going for like the, hey, it's the holidays and you might go to a movie for Valentine's. A lot of people do. Go see Companion. It'll be fun. Fun cursive font, like rock solid. Director Drew Hancock, I do want to say, has not done a lot of big features. Mostly music videos, mostly some television stuff. As far as I can tell, this is really his first big directorial debut. I'd say probably the biggest. Solid, for sure. But also, like, not a lot of big flash either. He's not doing anything too wild. We're not having crazy robotic camera arms swinging into frame or anything like that. It's like nuts and bolts, like meat and potatoes directing, and it works. Like, it gets us over the line, like, with some good performances and like, a good script. Like, Companion's solid. I like Companion. I like Companion just fine. I feel like I'm running out of things to say. Any thoughts for recommendations?
No, again, I don't, because we're avoiding plot, I don't really have much to say.
Hold on. That is one good button for this. We are avoiding talking about a larger part of the film, but it really is one of those things like the less you know, the better going in. There's a reason the trailers do not show you everything and just kind of get you to intrigue. So know that going into Companion. There's more than meets the eye. With that, Andy, would you recommend Companion?
Yeah, I would, especially for horror fans. It's a good time. It's a quick 100 minutes. It's good for couples, good if you're single as well. It's got a lot of those horror tropes that I would talk about. There's chases, there's weapons, there's fighting, there's lots of blood in some scenes. It's got it's a little on the nose in some of its messaging, but that's fine too. It's fun. It's camp. It's a good time. Sophie Thatcher is going to be such a star. She's going to be so huge in the next few years, I think. Highly recommend.
Yeah, same. It's a lot of fun. Love Jack Quaid. Love Harvey Guillen. Lucas Gage is an up-and-comer. Sophie Thatcher is definitely an up-and-comer. Like, watch this space, kids. Companion's a good time. I feel like this might be one of those movies that in a few years people look back and be like, dude, Companion had a stacked cast. Like, yeah, small, quiet. I like it. Companion's good stuff. Very imaginative. Would recommend. With that, we should move into our next segment. Andy, what do we call this?
It's time for the trailer park. So we have a few trailers coming at you, and we're going to start with Magazine Dreams. Yes, that movie that was shelved starring Jonathan Majors a couple of years ago. So to give a little bit of backstory before we jump in, Magazine Dreams was kind of an Oscar vehicle for disgraced actor Jonathan Majors. In 2013, it was supposed to come out that year. It sold at Sundance in 2023, and there was Oscar talk for it. It was supposed to come out in December. Jonathan Majors was, in that time, convicted of misdemeanor assault of his then girlfriend, Grace Jabari, and has been kind of making a comeback tour, as people do in this industry, whether you think they deserve to or not. And Briarcliff Distribution, who distributed The Apprentice, film that no one wanted to touch, has picked this up for distribution, and it will be coming out this spring. So to recap, this is a bodybuilding drama. That's all we knew in the beginning. And it stars Jonathan Majors as Killian Maddox, who's an aspiring bodybuilder. He's passionate, he's driven, he's obsessed. His room is covered in bodybuilding posters, and it's a drama. He's clearly making up for what's missing on the inside with the outside. You see him lose control, lose his temper. But he's struggling, probably financially. He's struggling. He's got to look after his father also. This is a beautiful trailer. It's really moving. There's this operatic thing going on. Man, this looks really good. And I hate to, I'm not going to endorse Jonathan Majors yet, but he is making a comeback, and we're probably going to watch this.
Dude, we wanted to see listen, Andy and I have been doing this podcast a while. We wanted to see this movie long before the news broke. We were stoked about this way before any of this happened. And I don't mean to say I'm not still stoked about it, but it looks just as good as we had thought it would look. Like, Killian Maddox is such a complicated individual, this hulking brute of a man. And dude, he's so soft. You hear Major speak, his voice is like higher pitch. He's pitching him up. He's higher than Kang. Like, he's this big softy dude who's so misunderstood, and nobody gets him, and he's alone, and he's like taking care of his dad, and he thinks he's got to hit steroids to get bigger because then I'll mean something. Like, it's brutal. This is like Darren Aronofsky brutal stuff. But also, Majors is kind of a monster. So, like, it's a weird thing, and it's a weird space to be in for film. I really wish the Major stuff had never happened, and like, we could all just enjoy this movie for what it is. I'm worried I won't be able to enjoy it the same way, but I am certainly interested. I was interested in Magazine Dreams before, and I'd be lying if I said I wasn't still interested in it now. That's Magazine Dreams. I know we'll have to cover it at some point. The next film we're talking about is Final Destination Bloodlines, which I'm really excited to talk about because I don't think I've seen much of this series. I think I've seen a couple of them, maybe all the way through. I'm very familiar with the clips, though. Final Destination Bloodlines is the sixth entry in the Final Destination series. Of course, if you're listening to the podcast, I'm sure you're aware that Final Destination is the movies where a group of young teenagers, friends, are predicted to die at the beginning of the movie. Somehow they escape their death, and then slowly death comes for them in a variety of like Rube Goldbergian like machine ways, or like just little things will happen in a room around them, and suddenly they slip and fall and crack their neck, or God forbid something worse. As five of these films before this, they each escalate in violence and complication of plot, I think. And this looks like, as somebody who's not seen it all, bit of a reset. Bit of a, hey, come on in. If you missed the first five Final Destinations, you can bring your high school date or whatever, because I'm sure you're a high schooler who hasn't seen them, or you're like me, a bum, and watch Final Destination and enjoy it. Actually, for what it's worth, good teaser. You get like a whole kill sequence in here, which is low key, I think, what a Final Destination teaser should do. Thank God it's not just a logo reveal. We open on a young man, Eric, a tattoo artist who is currently giving a tongue piercing to somebody. After they leave, he pops on his Spotify, Eric's sad mix, very funny in all caps. And slowly, as he's giving himself a tattoo of the word dad, after looking at a photo of his dear old dad, dear old pop, some things start to happen around the tattoo shop. This cleaning fluid tips over onto the ground, and this chain gets caught around this fan, and it hooks his septum piercing. And before he knows it, he's getting strung up by his nose before he flips off the chair. You can watch the trailer. Anyway, solid teaser. Credit where it's due. That's a lot for a teaser. Most just give you a logo, so I'm impressed. What do you think of this, Andy?
Oh, man. It brought back memories. So the first Final Destination was a huge phenomenon. In the first one, famously, these teens that are supposed to get on a plane don't get on it, and the plane blows up. And what's amazing in the scene, it happens off screen, the plane explosion, and you kind of don't see it because they're in the airport, and then like the shock waves come and explode the glass in the terminal, and it's kind of an amazing thing. This creeped me out so bad because there's so many things that are set up. It reminded me of Saw, actually, because it was so kind of gross. Yeah. But yeah, there's this fan that's kind of rickety that's swiping this chain that's getting slow, more and more loose. There's cleaning fluid that's inevitably tipped over. There's like all these things setting up to kill this person. And man, I thought it was really effective. And like I said, it reminded me more of Saw than Final Destination.
Yeah, I had the same thing. I had a friend reach out on Twitter and we were talking about it. And like, I do think Saw and Final Destination have a similar trajectory in that they both have very complicated murders, and each entry in the series has to up the ante, right? And make it more complicated. The way this guy is trying to escape it by like holding onto this chain and like crawling up on this thing, like it feels just like a Saw trap. Got to get out before it's too late. It's rad. I think the Final Destination Bloodlines teaser looks good. Hopefully we get more of the movie. Also, as far as I know, the dad in the trailer is not actually related to anybody in the series, because I hadn't seen many of those previous ones, and I figured, oh, maybe that's like the protagonist from the first one or something, and like I don't think they're anybody. So that's one of the Bloodlines. We'll find out more soon. One more teaser to talk about, Andy. Hit us with it.
Fantastic Four First Steps. So this is the new Fantastic Four movie, which we've anxiously been awaiting. We don't really see too much in the trailer. It's set in the 60s. We knew that it was going to be kind of a period piece. How that eventually gets tied into the rest of the MCU, we'll find out. So we meet our Fantastic Four, having already kind of become that. Pedro Pascal's Reed Richards, Vanessa Kirby as Sue Storm, the Invisible Woman, Joseph Quinn as Johnny Storm, the Human Torch, and Eben Moss Backrack as Ben Grimm, the Thing. So we see those three characters, the Thing. We see Joseph Quinn jump and burst into flames as the Human Torch. We see Vanessa Kirby turn invisible. We do not see Reed Richards turn into Fantastic, as in he doesn't do any stretchy thing. Like, that's his whole thing. So he can stretch his body, his arms, and that sort of thing. For some reason, they didn't have us do any of that. We get glimpses of the villain, Galactus. No voice. That's going to be voiced by Ralph Ineson, so I'm interested to see that voice. No Silver Surfer, which is going to be played by Julia Garner. The Silver Surfer is, of course, the harbinger of Galactus. I think this looks good. But we don't see too much. Like, we don't get anything on plot or on tone, really. There's a little bit of humor. I think it does look good on a technical spot. The character design is good, but we just don't have a lot. I wish they'd given us more. We'll have to wait till the full teaser comes out in a couple of months.
Yeah, I'm going to say the fault of this one is on Disney. They opened this teaser with an hour-long live stream, including a live interview with the cast on a stage, all pressing a button together to launch the Fantastic Four teaser. It was like, this is going to be the most monumental. And then you watch it, you're like, this is kind of a lame teaser. Yeah, you don't see Mr. Fantastic's powers at all. They got a lot of CGI to do on this movie. They definitely have not worked out Silver Surfer yet, so I don't see him. Like, they're still working on it. The big thing I think that people are afraid of is this going to be better than the 2005 Fantastic Four? And for those of you who are thinking the 2005 Fantastic Four sucked, do we remember Fan Four Stick? That was really bad, dude. Like, it can get worse for sure. So, like, you the bar is pretty low. And for what Marvel's doing here, it's a layup. They're a family. They're together. They're all going to get their powers. They're going to fight the first person. Like, it just seems like such a layup Marvel plot. And this fun 60s Jetsons retro future world that we're in seems awesome. Like, I love the look of it. The design seems really sharp. But there's just not a lot of meat on the bone here. We don't see more than kind of what we already knew. We do get a good look at the thing design, and I think that's valuable. But outside of that, I don't know, man. Need a little bit more meat on this bone. That's what I think about the Fantastic Four First Steps teaser.
I had no idea that they had done this big countdown with the whole cast. Did you not see that this morning?
Oh, no, my God. I'll send it to you. Yes.
I knew that it was going to be on, like, Good Morning America or whatever. So that makes this look really bad. Like,
yeah,
if I had a countdown like that, I would expect something like the Superman trailer, which dropped, I was
hoping for like a 2.5 minute full trailer, hold on to your seat, and it's like, no, this is like a minute 30. It's fine, it's good. I think what's here looks cool for sure. I think it looks like a good reset for Marvel. I'm interested in where it's going, but like, we gotta get another trailer out soon. Gotta see Mr. Fantastic stretching. We need the memes. People wanted the meme post today. They wanted the memes. They were
yeah.
They
there was really nothing. Yeah. So I wait, withholding judgment until we can see more.
Yeah. One more movie to talk about on the podcast this week. If you've stuck around for this, so stoked to talk about it. This is a movie I heard I should watch last year. People were like, "Have you seen this? You should check this movie out." Red Letter Media covered it. I was like, oh man, this really seems like something worth checking out. And I just never got around to it. And then this week we wanted to watch Sing Sing, the A24 feature starring Colman Domingo. We thought it was going to be on Apple, like with the subscription. Turns out it's still a $20 rental over there. And while looking for something else, I figured, hey, you know what? Strange Darling is only a $6 rental. So we should watch that. So with that, we should talk about this movie. I'm going to be taking the summary. So please excuse my delivery. The film is Strange Darling. So, in Strange Darling, I should say, well, hold on, I had a better way I wanted to open this. Let me take this from the top. Between 2018 and 2020, the most prolific and unique American serial killer of the 21st century went on a calculated multi-state spree that began in Denver, Colorado, continued through the Grand Lake, and expanded across Wyoming and central Idaho, before culminating in the dense forest of Hood River County, Oregon. Drawing from police interviews, detailed accounts of eyewitnesses, depositions, and observations of various law enforcement, Strange Darling is a dramatization of the true story of the final known killings in that rampage. And what a story it is. Strange Darling is a film told in 6 chapters, starring Willa Fitzgerald as the lady and Kyle Gallner as the demon. Two binary roles. The film opens with a woman fleeing a man. Good God. And her ears lopped off, and she's wearing red scrubs, and she's running slow-mo through a field. And there's this guy, Kyle Gallner, who has almost a buzz cut haircut and this huge silver rifle, and he's wearing this lumberjack red and black flannel, and he is out to get her. We cut to a car chase going really fast. We are flying down the road. He's right behind her. He can't get away. He's huffing stuff off the dashboard. It's a whole thing. Her Pinto flips over. It's all gas right from the start of Strange Darling. And I think what's most interesting about it is how small the story manages to be with so much energy. Director J.T. Molnar brings something truly special to this feature. These two stars, Willa Fitzgerald and Kyle Gallner, are a delight. It's fantastic. This cat and mouse game that is so full of twists and turns, I can't even tell you all of them. You got to go watch it yourself. Almost similar to Companion. But I am excited to talk about it here on the pod. Andy, what did you think of Strange Darling?
So this is another one that I had heard a lot of buzz about in the summer, and people were like, you got to see it, and don't watch anything, like don't watch a trailer, don't. And that's kind of how I saw it. So this is actually my second rewatch, so it's interesting, haven't seen it again. The story is in 6 parts and an epilogue, and they're told out of order. I think we start with chapter 3. So the story slowly unwinds and reveals things. I just want to stick to the first kind of 2 parts because I don't want to give, like Companion, I don't want to give too much away. But yeah, it starts with this tour de force, all gas, no brakes, you know, car chase through the woods, someone stalking their prey. And again, when we meet Willa Fitzgerald's character, the lady, she's injured, she's bleeding, she's missing half her ear, like it's and she's being pursued by this terrible person, and then we that's kind of our opening in our first part. I don't want to say chapter. But then we flash back to when they first meet, which is a completely different setting. They're they're in a car. They're just talking. They've met on a, it's kind of like a date, like they've met on a dating app or something. And they're just having a conversation and they're, you know, throwing back a few beers in the parking lot, just having a good time, having, you know, conversations. This looks like that, you know, they're outside of a hotel that they might get. And so it's in stark contrast to where we began. And it's one of those things you're like, well, how did we get there from here? And that's part of what pulls you in. But the movie just, it looks beautiful. It's shot on glorious 35mm film. It looks like it could have been taken place in the 80s, the 90s, or any time since then. It's got this just really bright, almost oversaturated, anytime it's outside. But like when they're in the parking lot of this hotel or motel, they're just bathed in this blue light, which is really nice. So it does some really interesting things with colors. And it's also, you know, it toys with expectations constantly. There are slowly more and more things revealed. And every time you thought you knew what was happening, maybe things change and it's a whole new story. So I really have enjoyed this. Haven't seen it twice.
Yeah. Strange Darling, I think, is a movie about surprises. And how you cannot truly expect what is to come, but you can only really be ready for it. There are so many odd reveals in this movie. From our very open, like our movie sets the stage. The very first thing you see is a title card that says shot entirely on 35mm film in all capital letters. They are letting you know from the jump street, you are in good hands. Like this is going to be a whole feature. This is well thought out. We have shaped what you are about to see. You know what I mean? And then we open on shot of Kyle Gallner in a car. Somebody's talking to him, this like blue light, and then hard cut to him strangling somebody, hard red yellow light in some kind of interior, and then title card. Like, and then following that, we have a woman running through a field. Like, you're immediately getting blasted with images of like, what am I seeing? And your initial impression, as the title cards reveal, Willa Fitzgerald is the lady and Kyle Gallner is the demon. Right off the top, she is some kind of victim who's being pursued. He is the bad. He is the evil. Like, he is going to be the thing that is chasing her. And through our whole first act, first chapter, he is relentlessly that thing. Brutally so. Like, he is so merciless in chasing and hunting this lady. Like, she cannot get away. And she's horrified. Like, tears running down, makeup, hair's a mess. Yeah, she's already been hit once. Like, her Pinto rolls. Like, it's got so much energy, and it reminds you in its out of order presentation of something like old Tarantino, right? A grindhouse feature.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, it's like playing with expectations on like a razor thin budget, but it doesn't need to do anything big because it's got that creative drive behind it. It's got this force like in the script, like really fantastic. The structure is what makes this movie work. Just like Chris Nolan's Memento, just like Pulp Fiction. If you edited this to be in the right order, it would not be nearly as fun. Like the whole playing with expectation is like what Strange Darling's like bread and butter is. It's where this movie cruises.
Yeah, and I wanted to talk about our performances of our leads, particularly Willa Fitzgerald, who largely carries the movie. Like, she's 90% of it. And it's such a physical role, like, cause she gets beat up, she gets shot, she's injured, she's running, and she's like slowly over the course of the film, like just in worse and worse shape. It's just such a physical thing. I thought she was like a breakout. She's done tons of TV. Like, she was in the Scream TV series. She was on Gotham. She was on the Jack Reacher show. So she's kind of done a lot of that kind of stereotypical blonde roles, but this was a whole new thing, just like heavy duty acting from beginning to end. And same thing with Kyle Gallner, which he made a post about how to say his name. That's the only reason I know. Same thing. He is also under duress this whole time as this, you know, as we see him in the beginning, this maniac just chasing. Same thing. He's going through a lot himself personally, which is later revealed. But also having to do a lot of physical acting, running, screaming, like he's hunting her down half the movie. And they also have a lot of long kind of intimate dialogue as well, which is later revealed. But really stunning physical acting for both characters.
I'm not real familiar with J.T. Molnar, who wrote and directed. I wish I was. I need to go back and check out more of his work for sure. I think this is so far the big breakout, right? If it's getting to somebody like me who's never seen anything he's done, like this is going to be obviously a feature that will carry him to bigger projects, which is good. Bigger budgets, like that's all good. But I am familiar with his cinematographer, Giovanni Ribisi, we need to talk about. Giovanni Ribisi, of course, is an actor, typically. He's done photography on a couple of music videos, really. Nothing too large. And it was a bit of a headline when this movie kind of came down the pike that people were like, oh, the guy that's in Avatar? The guy who's in Band of Brothers is shooting this thing? Like, he's DPing? But he's good, dude. Obviously, some room to grow. Like, I'm not going to say my man is, like, a breakout cinematographer or anything. But, like, there's a lot of cool stuff going on. When I was just talking about Companion a minute ago and I said there's not too much flash, bit of flash in Strange Darling. It's impressive. Like, big lights, big camera lenses, like big camera moves, like a lot of clever stuff, a lot of nuts and bolts for sure. But hey, for first feature, like he takes a lot of liberties, tries a lot of cool things that I think is really clever, like and works really well for presentation. Like those reds are bright red, dude. That blonde is platinum blonde. That gun is so silver chrome. It's crazy. Like really good color in this movie. Good looking movie.
Yeah, it really stands out. And again, red, I think, is a theme. Like when we first see the lady, she's wearing these red scrubs. She has this red wig that we see her in some scenes. Her pinto is this bright red. So that's definitely part of what, the movie's about. And it's a movie about expectations, like I said, and kind of the dangers of the biases we implicitly have about, assumptions that we make about certain people, certain genders, how dangerous or safe that they may or may not be. Real interesting stuff. And yeah, there's some great like slow-mo shots. It opens with Willa Fitzgerald kind of running through this field in slow motion with this great arrangement of Love Hurts. The score and songs I also really like. It's by this artist called Zberg out of LA that they does a lot of wrote songs for this movie, especially. You can find the soundtrack on Spotify. Really effective throughout, like perfect needle drops, but they're all original songs outside of Love Hurts.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Yeah, great looking movie. Like, love the pace of it. The structure works real good. Like, this kind of chaptered structure. It tells you in the early title cards a story told in six chapters. Like, they, again, just setting the stage for expectation and then following up with something that you don't expect. It's real clever. It's real sharp. And I like that the movie has conversations about it, too. Like, for all of its running and jumping and action and shooting and violence, like, there's a couple of genuinely candid conversations about like, well, you know, how is a woman supposed to be perceived on a date night like this? You know what I mean? Like, is our demon character like acting in good faith or is he as bad as we think? You know, when is this all going to go south? And like, why is the lady like, why is she just subject to this? Is it by chance? Is this something she sought out? Like, it's complicated. And it's like shades of gray in a movie with so much color that I think really pops off the screen. Like for a 97 minute feature, low budget, like with a small cast, like really great work. I would love it if this team could go do another project with more money and get in front of a bigger audience. Cause like it's a really special feature. Strange Drawing is great. Any other thoughts or recommendations, Andy?
Yeah, well, it's a shame that this didn't get wider distribution because, man, I think with a bigger like advertising budget, it would have been something else. It's a small feature, and I can see why. You know, sometimes studios might kind of shy away from stuff like this. Universal famously passed on The Substance. They didn't want to go near it, or they wanted Coralie Farjah to make a bunch of cuts to it, which she didn't want to do, and so they passed on it, and Mubi picked it up. And this is kind of in that same vein, where maybe it was too much for mainstream studios, but definitely wish it would have had a wider release.
Yeah, a lot of talent in this movie. Willa Fitzgerald needs more work. On IMDb, it says she's doing like one TV series right now. What are we doing? That better be the best TV series ever. Like whatever she's got going on, she needs to be doing something big. Same with Kyle Gallner. He's great. With that, Andy, would you recommend Strange Darling?
Absolutely. For horror heads, especially, content warning, it is incredibly violent at times. It is a horror movie at its core, but it really plays with your expectations. It starts with to shoot you out of a cannon, real intense chase scene to start with, and then it goes back and shows you how our characters met and got involved and how they ended up where they go. Like I said, really subverts a lot of things that you might expect. Every time you think you know where it's going or what's happening, you're kind of it upsets the apple cart. So highly recommend for horror fans.
Yeah, same. I think Strange Darling is a good time. If you like a good indie, something a little hard edge, looking for a rated R feature that you can have a little fun with, like rock solid. We found it on streaming for VOD. It was $6 on Amazon. Would recommend. Also worth mentioning, there's a post-credit sequence. If you do run it on Amazon, Amazon will kick you to 3 minutes of ads as soon as the credit starts. And if you're dope like me, you'll just go back to menu and you'll never see that post-credit sequence. And I hear it's not anything too flashy, but I'm a little bummed that people aren't getting credit on Amazon. So Strange Darling's good though. Like, and it's worth watching and it's worth paying credit. Like, pay. It deserves its audience, I think. Deserves more people. Deserves more eyes. That's Strange Darling. What an episode, Andy. Good Lord. Moved through it fast this week as opposed to last week where we took a little bit longer for our Oscar nominations.
Again, when we can't talk about the plots of both movies, it makes for a shorter show for sure.
Hey, that's true. And our Oscar noms last week were great. If you missed it, you can go back and check our episodes on YouTube. Before we get to that, though, before we get to the plugs, what are we watching next week, Andy?
So this week, February 7th, Love Hurts, which is the Ke Huy Quan, Ariana DeBose action love story thing. Ke Huy Quan plays a retired assassin who's just, so he's a real estate guy now, but his old outfit comes looking for him. Yeah, we need you back. We need you to be the old you. Also stars Marshawn Lynch, a former NFL player who's done quite a bit of TV or film now. This looks like a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. And we're going to look for something else on streaming as well. Maybe catch another one of these Oscar films. And some FYI releases, Heart Eyes, the slasher Valentine's movie, is also coming out this week. And I'm Still Here, the Brazilian film that Fernando Torres is Oscar nominated for, and the film itself as well in Best Picture. That is getting a wider release if you're interested in that. But Love Hurts and streaming to be decided for next week.
Yes. If you want to hear more about Love Hurts and whatever we come up with on streaming, easiest way to do that is just follow the show. Subscribe specifically is what you're looking for if you don't already know. There's some way to do it. If you're on an audio platform, we love our audio listeners. Let's see, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, iHeartMedia. You can hit us over there. If you're on YouTube, you can subscribe somewhere around the screen where you're watching this right now. It's probably by the like button, actually. And you can hit us over there. Big things going on YouTube. Come follow. We're doing cool things. Got shorts. It's a whole thing. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all the usual social media places. And gosh, you can check out our website, offscriptfilmreview.com, for more. And you can email us directly, correspondence@offscriptfilmreview.com. Leave a comment, leave a like, let us know what you thought of the show. It helps us out a bunch, moves us up in the almighty algorithm in the sky. That's what I've been told. And yeah, it's Off Script, episode 281. From all of us at Off Script, the home of Bold Cinema, I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
Thanks for watching.